Today's passage is from Isaiah 55, 1-3. Invitation to the thirsty. Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money, without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen, listen to me, and eat what is good, and you will delight in the richest of fare. Give ear and come to me. Listen, that you may live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you, my faithful love promised to David. Now Matthew 6:19-21, treasures in heaven. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Thank you. There is a modern proverb that claims, he who dies with the most toys wins. Now, I haven't checked the leaderboard lately, but I do know that Kim Kardashian West took a hit this week. You might have heard in the news that Kim Kardashian was held at gunpoint in a $10 million robbery in Paris this week. Now, the first thing that came to my mind after I discovered that she was okay, that was obviously my first concern, was how on earth did someone steal $10 million from her? Like, $10 million is more than almost anyone in this room will make over the course of your entire life. Like, how could someone just break into your house and steal $10 million? But when your stuff includes a $5 million ring, etc., well, I guess it's actually not that difficult. They just put stuff in their pockets, and they had $10 million worth of stuff. Now, I wouldn't wish being robbed at gunpoint on anyone, even a reality TV star, but the loss of her gaudy material possessions certainly isn't going to keep me up at night. This morning, we're going to be talking about the story that our culture tells about stuff. Possessions, money, toys. And while I may have started off with an extreme example, someone who has a lot of stuff, don't worry, I'll bring it closer to home. Even if you don't approach life as a materialistic game, chances are you're still somewhat enamored by the wide array of toys that are out there on the market. I think of a commercial I saw last week for BMW, and they're kind of introducing this futuristic self-driving car. I mean, there's something impressive about that. I can't even fathom how much this is going to cost, but there's something impressive about that, isn't there? Or maybe you're driving through an upscale neighborhood in our city, and you drive by a home, and you're just like, oh, it's so beautiful, it's so nice. You know, what job does that person have? Or maybe you were one of the people who got really excited about the iPhone 7 and got in line and put this order in, and everyone's going crazy about having the newest phone and all the exciting things that it can do. We all get enamored by these things from time to time. And what does it say about our culture? And are there any other options for us out there? So I bought this book and started reading it last week. It's called An Other Kingdom, Departing the Consumer Culture by Peter Block, Walter Brueggemann, and John McKnight. And as soon as I started reading this book, I thought, I am in trouble because this is going to mess around with the way that I think. They made an observation that I think I want to frame the first part of this message this morning. They said, you do not have enough, therefore you are not enough, is a powerful belief sustaining the market. So when we think about the story that our culture tells us about stuff, this kind of summarizes it. You do not have enough, therefore you are not enough. And this is the story that we're told. Now, I don't consider myself an overly materialistic person. All right, materialistic to a degree, for sure, the same as the rest of us. But the reality is, I mean, I'm happy to wear the same shirt for like 10 years. I don't really care about new clothes. I drive a 2001 Corolla, so it's not like the car isn't the thing that really gets me. And as many of you know, I don't really care what phone I have. You know, it doesn't really matter. It's not my main thing. But as I was thinking about myself, I told you we were going to bring it a little closer to home. I thought, the truth is that while I don't really care about wearing new clothes, if someone gets me, like Melissa buys me like a nice new shirt, I actually like feel better about myself when I wear like a new shirt. That's the reality. That's the truth. Sorry to disappoint you this morning. And the reality is that when we traded in our old Caravan that was rusted out and just didn't work anymore and got a new 2008 Caravan, like, actually wasn't as humiliated driving through our city and parking. And the truth is, and this is, some of you are going to lose all respect for me, while I really don't care about a phone at all, I was out for coffee with Jeff and Kim one night, and I pulled up my slide keyboard Samsung phone, and he said that was a problem. It ended up hooking me up with a new BlackBerry 10. And I got to tell you, I'm not embarrassed to pull out a phone in public anymore. And I know that'll be disappointing just for some of you. But I actually feel like I belong to the 21st century now. And so I've been thinking about this. And as much as I don't think I'm a materialistic person, the reality is these things that I have, or these changes in things that I have, it actually connects somehow with who I am and how I see myself as a person. And I think, what the heck is wrong with me? Or we could broaden it a little bit, take the focus off myself for a minute. What the heck is wrong with us? Why on earth do we let stuff have any say at all about who we are? Now, to clarify, I'm not talking about possessions themselves. Possessions in and of themselves don't have to be negative. But why do we let them affect us the way that we do? Our possessions are tied so closely to our identity, way too closely. Think about the word consumer, right? Like, it's one thing to consume something. We all have to. You can't stay alive for very long without consuming. At the very least, food. You know, you have to wear clothes. You have to consume things to have a roof over your head. You have to consume. But the identity of ourselves as consumers is an interesting one. That this thing that we need to do, this function that you need to do, all of a sudden becomes who we are. That we are now not a person who consumes, but we are consumers. I don't know if you've seen this at Sobeys, these little grocery carts they have. You can't read it because it's not a very good picture. But this is Jude in the grocery store. And they have these mini grocery carts. They're like a grocery cart, but like a mini size with a big flag that says customer in training. And I thought, exactly. You are trying to get my kid to be a consumer in your store. From a very young age, our training as consumers, our indoctrination, if you will, begins at a very young age. And it becomes just a part of our culture, and a lot of times we don't notice that it's happening. Every once in a while, someone says something that reveals what's really going on. And I think one of the classic examples of this actually came from George Bush's address following the attacks of September 11th. Many of you will remember what he said, because what he said was so shocking. His response, he said, like, what we need to do, what Americans need to do to fix this problem, do you remember? Go shopping. That's what he said. He said the solution to the potential collapse of our economy and all of this terror that's going on, the solution is get out there and go shopping, people. This is going to fix everything. And it was shocking because everyone's like, wait a second, you're not supposed to say those things out loud. This is supposed to be like an undercurrent. We don't actually say this. We don't notice it a lot of the time. Jamie Smith talks about what it means to be just so part of a culture that we don't even really notice. He talks about it being a native. As a native, you now can't imagine seeing the world otherwise. It will just seem that this is the way things are, and you'll generally act accordingly. Becoming a native is, in fact, a kind of cultural accomplishment. And so there is this kind of underlying current that's trying to get us to get into this system. And the fact is we actually feel an accomplishment when we're part of the system, when we become consumers, when we buy these things. We feel like, yes, I'm accomplishing what I'm supposed to accomplish. And we believe, in a sense like George Bush proposed, that stuff can fix our problems. In a sarcastic observation, Sophie Kinsella writes in Confessions of a Shopaholic, I love new clothes. If everyone could just wear new clothes every day, I reckon depression wouldn't exist anymore. So, okay, going a little far, but the idea that, come on, new stuff can fix our problems. A number of years ago, Robert Baylor wrote a book called Habits of the Heart. And he said that happiness is to be attained through limitless material acquisition is denied by every religion and philosophy known to man, but is preached incessantly by every American television set. Now, the interesting thing about this comment, I think it's profound, but it was written in 1985. And the world has changed a lot since there. And the one thing I was thinking as I read this is that I think materialism is a religion. I don't think it's like there's all the religions out there that people follow and then there's like normal life. I think materialism actually is a religion. The mall is the temple. The salesperson is the evangelist. Pleasure in the present life is offered instead of pleasure in a future life. Faith in a free market economy replaces faith in the Creator. And it's a compelling religion for people to follow and be a part of. Ron Sider, in his famous book, Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, wrote that the standard of living is the God of 20th century America and the ad man is its prophet. But do we pay attention? Do we see what's going on around us? Because most of the messages are subtle. Most of the messages approach us at an unconscious level. But every once in a while, one slips through. Now, this has been on my mind this past week. I've been thinking about it, so I've been noticing a lot more. Two different radio ads I heard this past week. The first one, for a shoe store, they had this line, and it's clever, but it says, a first impression starts from the ground up. Right? That's a pretty clever line for a shoe store. But I was thinking about it. Here it is again, tying possessions and identity. What a person is going to think of you starts with the shoes that you wear and where the place that you should buy those shoes. So again, tying possessions with identity. The worst, of course, is from a jewelry store in Uptown Waterloo. And I know, don't kick a dog when it's down. Uptown businesses are having a hard time, but come on. This radio ad is over the top. It's like for a jewelry store. And they have this one part in the ad where they say, women love diamonds. And the radio ad ends, and remember, the bigger, the better. And I'm like, wow, okay, that wasn't subtle at all. I wasn't like aiming at my subconscious. I was like aiming at my conscious, like head on. Like, bigger, the better. Is that true? You see, now it's not just having stuff that matters, it's having more stuff than the person beside you. The problem, of course, is there will always be something more to have. You'll never have the most stuff. Now listen, denying that stuff brings us happiness would be naive. To pretend that, you know, these things will never make you happy. Well, that's just not true. They actually can make you happy. They can bring you a lot of comfort. They can bring a lot of excitement. Absolutely. But not lasting joy. And certainly not anything approaching true satisfaction. Because satisfaction is a materialistic impossibility, right? Because if there was such a thing as being satisfied materially, our culture would fall apart. Like the economy would just collapse. You can't ever be satisfied. There always has to be something more to chase after. You do not have enough, therefore you are not enough. In order to become enough, you need more. How can any of us live with that? So we come to a point where we either just continue to play the game or we recognize the game for what it is. And that can actually be a scary place, but it can be a good place at the same time. An author, Baxter Kruger, writes, "We're like the kid at the fair who suddenly realizes that he's been separated from his parents and is lost. He's in the midst of everything that a kid dreams about. Rides, games and prizes, stuffed animals, cotton candy. But he's so torn up on the inside, he cannot even see the fair and has lost every shred of freedom to enjoy it. There can be a point that we come to where we realize, you know, everything is like at my disposal. Everything is available for the taking around me. But you feel alone and you feel like something's not right here, like something doesn't satisfy at this deeper level. It can seem like a scary place to be, but if we can get there, then there's hope for us. There's hope for a reunion with our parents who we've lost at the fair. There's hope for a reunion with our Creator who has created us for so much more than this stuff. Eugene Peterson writes that following Jesus has everything to do with this world, but almost nothing in common with this world. What Jesus has to say is intensely practical, but it's a radical departure from the expected. He doesn't say the things that really fit with the world that we live in. He says things like this: do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy, where thieves break in and steal. Moths and vermin. I don't know. You know, the moth is my least favorite insect. Some people don't like snakes. Some people don't like spiders. Some people don't like other things. For me, it's moths. I can't even stand a moth. It creeps me out. They're just gross and dirty. And so the concept of my things being eaten by moths is it keeps me up at night. I was talking to a colleague this week, and he discovered that they have termites in their house. They actually, what? We don't have termites around here. Oh, yeah, we do. I won't tell you what neighborhood he lives in, but termites in his house, and he's got to spend at least the first amount is going to spend $4,000 to get these things to stop eating his stuff. And I was thinking, you know, I feel bad for him, but what a great illustration. Like, they are literally eating his possessions. Like Jesus says, it's going to happen. Literally, it's happening to him. And I feel bad, but it's also kind of funny. but I mostly feel bad. So let's go back to our modern proverb. He who dies with the most toys wins. I read a blog comment on an article that was written about this, and someone said, it's nonsense. He who dies with the most toys is dead, and somebody else gets all the toys. That's true. It's funny, but not without making an undeniable observation that none of this comes with us. None of the stuff that we like so much comes with us. It reminded me of an old U2 song, a profound message. All that you fashion, all that you make, all that you build, all that you break, all that you measure, all that you feel, all this you can leave behind. Like, none of it comes with you. It's all left behind at the end of the day. So maybe all the stuff we're chasing after isn't worth all that worth chasing after anyways. Katie sent me an email this week and an article that she had read called, the headline says, "This Mom Threw Out Her Kids' Toys and Got Her Life Back." And it's this fascinating article about this mother who was tired of tripping over toys and kids fighting over toys and toys just everywhere in the house. And she said, you know what, forget it. Like, I'm getting rid of everything except like a small little shelf of toys. And she talked about how her family is like at peace. The kids are getting along. They're using their imaginations. She's like got her sanity back. And this crazy idea that actually maybe letting go of some of the stuff that we have could be a beneficial thing. The article said that a 2012 study from UCLA's Center on the Everyday Lives of Family, isn't it great that there's like a center studying just our everyday lives? I think that's great. Anyways, they found that managing the volume of possessions was such a crushing problem in many homes that it actually elevated levels of stress hormones for mothers. I mean, this is kind of humorous too, right? Like, most of us deal with stress, you know, and for a long time, you know, people have dealt with stress for things like, you know, whether it's failing a test in school is stressful, losing a job, poor health, ending a relationship. There are all kinds of things that people have dealt with stress for a long time, but now we add to the list of things that we're already stressed out about, managing our possessions. Like, oh my goodness, I'm so stressed out about managing all of my stuff. And this mom decided, actually, it's kind of easy, this one. You just get rid of stuff, and then you don't have to manage it anymore. Brian McLaren wrote that the church exists to save people from the great danger of wasting their lives. Becoming something less than and other than what they were intended to be, gaining the world, but losing their souls. Which, of course, he stole from Jesus, who said, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? How does the worth of anything that we're chasing after compare to the worth of our soul? If we're not part of a bigger story about stuff, we're ripe for manipulation and seduction because something's got to fill the gap or the void in our lives. Block, Brueggemann, and McKnight write, so you don't have a story, but you can buy a new refrigerator. And it is amazing that a refrigerator can be more seductive than a people with a story. It's amazing that in the absence of a greater purpose and a greater orienting factor of our lives, that need can be plugged by something as simple as a refrigerator. And I was thinking about it and realizing that sometimes maybe we need to look at our concerns about stuff as maybe an indication that maybe we're not as plugged in to a bigger story as we think we are. We think, oh, come on, I mean, here I am in church. I mean, this is it, right? But I mean, if we're concerned about the stuff, if the stuff gets us excited, then maybe it's because something else isn't getting us excited. So Jesus goes on in this passage. He warns, you know, don't store up for yourself treasures on earth. But then he says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, it's easy to think that what Jesus was talking about was like the afterlife, that he's talking about heaven, that we need to store up ourselves things for when after we die and we go live somewhere else. But when he talks about where our heart will be, it sounds a lot more like he's talking about this life. The things that we're storing up, that's where our heart is. That's where our heart is going to be oriented. To quote Winnie the Pooh, sometimes the smallest of things take up the most room in your heart. Sometimes it's things that don't actually matter that much that take up this room. And Jesus makes another observation later on in the same passage. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. This is pretty radical, because I think most of us feel like we can actually do that, that we can be materialistic and serve God's kingdom at the same time. And Jesus says we can, but it's a love issue. He says, because you're going to either love one or love the other. If you love this one, then you're just not going to have the energy or the capacity to love the other, and vice versa. So we need to ask ourselves difficult questions. Where is our treasure? Where is our heart? Through Isaiah, then, God presents us with a different vision of stuff and community. Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without cost. I mean, who doesn't love a free meal, right? Thursday is kickoff to Oktoberfest Uptown Waterloo, and our staff walked uptown and got ourselves a free meal. Got some free sausage, pretzel, and a pop. Actually, at the end of it, Graham was there, and he said, I'm actually going to leave now because I'm going to go get another free meal somewhere else. And we're just like, wow. So some people really like a free meal. Really like a free meal. And we hear words like this, this idea of, like, buying stuff without money. It seems like, you know, there's something strange about it, but there's something also captivating about it. There's something about us that says the playing field needs to be a little more level than it is. And we actually even see signs of this in our culture. About a month or two ago, this story broke about Mylan Pharmaceuticals, all right? The makers of EpiPen. And I don't know if you read about this, but their CEO, so this is Heather Breschner. You can't read the red writing up there, but this is, someone added this onto her corporate photo. It says, the most evil woman on the planet. And the reason is that they have increased the price, the retail price of EpiPens by 400% over the last 7 years. And so people are like, wait a second, this is like a life-saving medication. You can't make that much money off it. And it's so interesting to me to hear our culture, you know, kicking back like this, saying, like, you're making too much more money than the next person. So even for the most capitalistic person out there, there's this idea that sometimes we cross a line, that some situations, you know, need to be leveled out a little more. There's a story in the Old Testament of the Bible, and it's about a guy named Joshua, and he's leading God's people, this nation, into the promised land. And the deal is they're supposed to go out, and they're supposed to rout the people who are in this next city out and take over their homes and their town and whatever. But they're not allowed to take anything from themselves, and this is one of the rules. It's like, you're going to go in here, you're going to have this battle, but you can't, like, seek personal gain out of this. So they go, and they take over a town, and they go to take over the next town, and they get routed. And so Joshua's like, God, what is going on? Like, why did we just get defeated? You said we weren't going to get defeated at all. And basically God says, well, someone broke the rules. So they go through this, like, you know, private investigation, and they discover this guy named Achan had taken some stuff while they were taking over this town. He saw this robe, and he's like, man, that is some sweet garment there. I'm going to take that. And he saw a piece of some gold, and he saw some silver, and he took it, and he buried it in his tent under the ground so that no one would know that he was making personal gain from this battle that they just came through. And they find it out, and, well, let's just say his life doesn't end too well. But there's this story that's told here about, like, wait a second, this is not how God's people live. We don't buy this, like, seek your gain for yourself. We're doing something together. We're doing something where we need to look out for each other's interests. And when one person puts themselves and their own interests ahead of everyone else, it actually hurts the community as a whole. So Block, Brigham, and McKnight, they respond again, and they say, you do not have enough, therefore you are not enough. That's a powerful belief sustaining the market. But faith communities must believe you are enough, and therefore you have enough. See, we start with our identity, and the identity is that we are enough, and that nothing we own, nothing we have, it changes our identity. It doesn't affect who we are. And so if we're confident in who we are and our identity, then we can be confident in what we actually have. It's a radical shift, and I'll tell you right now, it's not one that you or I can make on our own. Together, though, we can remind one another of where our identity lies. More on that in a few weeks from now. And we can remind one another of the possibility of saying no to our consumer culture. We can remind each other that actually we don't need to chase after the things that we're told we should be chasing after. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Why are we spinning our wheels like this? We need to ask each other these questions. We need to press each other. Jesus said at one point, if you want to be perfect, go. Sell your possessions and give to the poor and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. So in one point he says, you know, you should be storing up for yourselves treasure in heaven. We think, well, what does that mean? How do you do that? He answers it a little while later. Sell your possessions, give to the poor, level the playing field, stop keeping everything to yourself. It's important for us to recognize that Jesus led by example. Now, economically, he was likely poor from birth. But think about this. This is the Son of God who empties himself of all power and privilege to come down and serve humanity. And then he asks us to do the same thing. Empty yourselves of your power, your privilege, your possessions, for the sake of serving other people, for the sake of taking care of others. Losing your possessions as a result of a violent robbery, that's one thing. But deciding to lay them down because you believe in something more valuable, that's another thing. That's something that deserves to make the headlines. John Wesley was a Christian preacher from a couple of centuries ago. He was pretty extreme when it came to money. He has this quote, he said, "If I leave behind me 10 pounds, you and all mankind bear witness against me that I have lived and died a thief and a robber." If I leave anything behind, then I have not done what Jesus has called me to do. Now, he was an interesting character. So when he was starting out in life and kind of business, and he was a pastor, but he had other things going on, and he made like 30 pounds was his salary. All right, so whatever. We'll just deal with the numbers here. And he decided, I can actually live on this. I can live on 30 pounds. So what he decided was that he would always live on 30 pounds. So his salary went up to 40 pounds the next year, and he gave 10 of it away, and he lived on 30. And his salary went up to 100 pounds the next year, and he gave away 70, and he lived on 30. Eventually, his salary, the most he ever earned in a year was 1,400 pounds, and he lived on 30 pounds. He died almost penniless because every single thing he gave away except for what he needed. So he's not just talking. And Jesus wasn't just talking either. He wasn't just saying that this is like some crazy idea that I have just to make myself sound good. He's saying that this is actually a way that can be lived. And the rare, odd person like John Wesley comes along and says, I'm going to actually try this. I'm going to actually do it. And when we hear about Jesus saying these things and we hear about people doing this, it's like, oh my gosh, what does that mean? What does that look like? We need to figure it out for ourselves. But I'm guessing that it probably doesn't start with actually selling your home and moving into a van down by the river. It probably starts with smaller things. At the very least, with acknowledging how tied we are to our stuff. All right, so if you thought like my comment about my clothes and car was bad before, this is going to top it all. So 2 weeks ago, our garbage day is Monday morning. So on Sunday night, we set the garbage out of the curb. So I'm bringing our garbage out to the curb. This is so humiliating. Okay, I'm bringing our garbage out to the curb. And I see this guy in a pickup truck collecting metal. And he's going around to all the garbages and recycling bins, and he's pulling out like metal bits and throwing it in the back of his truck. And I have this thought. I'm just really regretting sharing this. I have this thought. So we have, for years, our kids had a trampoline, and the joint started wearing out, and we repaired them, and it wore out again. So we actually haven't used it in probably 2 or 3 years, and it's sitting in my garage, like all of these like trampoline parts, just sitting there taking up space. And I had this thought, I'm like, this guy would probably be so happy if I gave him like all of these like trampoline parts. Like think of how much money he'd make off of that. And I thought, oh, well, if he can make money off of it, so can I. And I didn't give the guy my trampoline parts. Like, isn't that pathetic? Yeah, please, throw something at me. I have a pathetic excuse for a human. Like, what is the matter with me? Like, I walked in. That was awesome. That was good. Like, seriously. No, but seriously, like, what is the matter with me? Maybe I could make $5. Like, $5? Like, come on. Anyways, this is where it starts, though, right? It starts with acknowledging my goodness, we are attached to our stuff. We can't even give away stuff we don't even use. Now, maybe all of the rest of you are better than me. Maybe no one else here has similar kind of attachments, but I'm guessing some of us do. I'm guessing that we can help each other, push each other, throw things at each other to say, come on, it's time to let go. It's time to let go and just bless other people with the stuff that we've been given, instead of keeping it to ourselves. St. Ignatius suggested that we should relate to our possessions like a statue. He said, you can put clothes on a statue, but it's not going to care. And if you take the clothes off the statue, it's not going to care. It's just a statue. He's like, that's what we should be like with our possessions. If we've got something, great. If it's taken away, great. I don't care. I'm a statue. It's kind of an interesting way for us to think. Now, besides selling our possessions, there are plenty of other ways that we can practice a different relationship with our stuff. We'll talk about it around discussion groups. But I just wanted to share a couple of things that kind of jogged my mind this past week. Last Sunday morning, I was talking to Natasha, and she was telling me about a Christmas present that the siblings are preparing for their parents. And you might be thinking, well, this is awkward. The parents are sitting right here. Why are you going to tell them about the Christmas gift? Because it was actually last year's Christmas gift that they're still working on. And they're making them a table. They're making them a table. And it's going to be a table that all of the family can gather around. And I thought, see, stuff isn't bad. Stuff is good. Like, we can be creative, and we can listen, look at the real needs in front of us, and we can use our hands, and we can be creative, and we can give a gift with meaning, and stuff is not bad in and of itself, right? Even if it takes a little longer. And then I was thinking about an example that Graham shared with me a while ago, but this thing he came across in the UK, it's called a library of things. It's this idea where we share stuff, where we create a physical space where we share stuff. And he's like, I want to do that here. I think we can do it here at the church, where we can just have, this can be a place where people in not only our church community, but the surrounding community can just take stuff out. Like, you take a book out from the library, you take a lawnmower out from our library, or you take out whatever you need. Like, so people don't have to spend so much money buying stuff we can share. I was thinking, yeah, we can do stuff together. So let's just start talking. Let's get the ball at least rolling a little bit about how we can get on board with a different type of story. Because that's why we're here. Walter Brueggemann writes, people still entertain the odd thought that God is a real character and the defining agent in the life of the world. People still gather in church to hear and struggle with what is not on offer anywhere else. There's not a whole lot of places you're going to walk into in life that are going to challenge you to consume less, to share what you've got. But this has got to be one of those places, right? So let's make it that place. It's Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving today, right? Time when we're thankful for all the stuff we have. Let's be thankful for the opportunity we have, maybe to let go of some of it. I'll close this morning by reading again from Isaiah 55. Why don't you stand, and I'll read this as we close today. Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk, without money, without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen. Listen to me, and eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest affair. Give ear and come to me. Hear me, that your soul may live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you, my faithful love, promised to David. God, somewhere deep down, we at least want to believe that you're enough for us. A lot of the times our actions and decisions don't demonstrate that. But we hear the words of Jesus. We hear the words of people come before us like John Wesley. We hear rumblings in our own community, a desire to make more out of the stuff we've got and to share. God, I pray that you would help us to be able to take a real look at our own lives and the way that we cling to stuff. And I pray that you would free us from that. That you'd help us to live by a different story, and that we'd be able to encourage one another in it. Go with us as we gather to discuss this morning. Go with us as we gather around tables this weekend, and maybe as we're reflecting on things we have to be thankful for, I pray that you would help us to really understand how much you have given, and that our response would be to give in return. We pray these things in Christ's name. Amen.